77 years ago, on March 1st, 1933, Fukushima Kaido was born into this world. He is, or was until very recently, both the Zen master and the head abbot of the Tofukuji school of Rinzai Zen in Japan. Many of you here have met him, have sat week-long intensive session at the monastery in Tofukuji. He has Parkinson's disease and is, although he always says, very fine when you ask how he is. he is basically limited to a wheelchair now. It's very difficult for him even to communicate, to talk. However, especially being his birthday, I think he would like to be remembered for a little bit more than that. He used to celebrate his birthday here in the States because he would come in February and March, March 1st was his birthday, to the States, travel around the United States, visiting universities and giving usually weekend retreats. And he was always so happy to say, "Oh, I love to celebrate my birthday in the United States. In monastery, nobody sing happy birthday." people would sometimes, you know, make round balloons and put it on his bald head, kind of what children would do for his birthday, and he would smile and let them do it and take pictures. Kind of look like Mickey Mouse or something, but it was fine. Being born in 1933, he grew up in the shadow of the Second World War. As you can imagine, it was a very difficult time. And as a child, his sister passed away from illness. And then his grandmother, who more or less was like a mother to him, his mother was there, but as is not uncommon in Japan, concerning the day-to-day concerns of the child, the grandmother was pretty much taking care of the young Fukushima. When she passed away, after his own sister also passing away, he decided, again, as is not uncommon in the Far East, to enter a monastery and become a monk. First, he became a kind of an acolyte monk at a temple in Okayama called Hofukuji, which is part of the Tofukuji school of Zen. He practiced under Okada, a Zen master named Okada. Not an intellectual kind of a guy, a very earthy guy, never really approved of Fukushima wanting to go on to college and then to graduate school, but he let him. Fukushima formally entered the temple at the age of 14. To give a sense of what life was like there, of course he went to school during the days, even though he lived at this temple. And he was studious, he was a good calligrapher. Sometimes, naturally, that was in conflict with the temple life. As he recalls, once he was preparing the fire for the bath, you know, they have a wood fire, and they heat up the big giant cauldron, and you sit in this tub and take a bath. So he was preparing the bath for his Zen master, Okada Roshi, and reading his science book at the same time. Had a test coming up. Okada Roshi, before he went into the bath, saw the young Fukushima and said, what are you doing? He said, I'm studying. I have a science test coming up. So Hukada Roshi said, well, I know a little something about science. I'll give you a little test right now. See if you can figure it out. Okay. So Hukada Roshi says, you have salt, sugar, and baking powder. Three white powders. Taking a glance, you might not even be able to tell the difference. How can you tell which is salt, which is sugar, and which is baking powder? And then he went, got into the bath, and soaked in the bath. The young Fukushima paged through his science book and didn't help. He put the book down and eventually Okada Roshi got out of the bath and said, so, did you figure it out? And Fukushima said, for the life of me, I don't know. How? And Okada Roshi said, simple. Taste it and you know. Only much later did Fukushima realize the marvelous, in a sense, Zen teaching he had been given. And how difficult he had made the very simple. Okada Roshi was, as many Zen masters are, a bit of a storyteller. Fukushima also recalls the time that Okada Roshi told at nighttime the story of Kyogen, as his name is pronounced in Japanese. The master known for, actually, it's not clear, but they usually say he was brushing. And his brush struck a pebble and it hit against the bamboo. And with the sound of that, he became enlightened. And it was told with such excitement and such life that Fukushima explained, well, the next day, six or seven of the acolyte young monks along with him, we, as soon as we got finished our chores, ran out to the nearest bamboo grove. And we spent the whole afternoon throwing stones at the bamboo, and we were no nearer enlightenment. It didn't work at all. Eventually, Fukushima met Shibayama Zenkei, who was the Zen master at Nanzenji, another one of the main major training monasteries of Rinzai Zen in Kyoto. And Fukushima went, actually, first on to college, and then even going to graduate school, which to this day still is not common, but back then was even less common, to go on to graduate school and then to go into the monastery. So he was in his 28th year when he went into the monastery, which is relatively late. Usually they'll go in right out of high school, or now more and more right out of 4 years of college. So about 22 years old, they'll enter the monastery. It's a very difficult, very rigorous life. So certainly after 30, it's not easy. Anyway, Shibayama had gone on and actually wrote a graduation thesis on the record of Rinzai. So as a monk, he was quite educated, quite experienced, going in again in his 28th year. And he tells of the enormous struggle. It's connected with being a fool, one of the questions that came up the other day. Because after a while, going to meet Shibayama, the master, every day, sometimes several times every day, struggling with his koan, and sometimes giving very eloquent, very brilliant answers, quoting from the record of Rinzai and whatnot, none of which impressed the Zen master at all. Sometimes he would say, if you're going to give answers like that, why don't you go back to school? Which is not a pleasant thing to hear in the one-on-one room. But eventually, it got so that the master Shibayama said nothing in the Doksan or Sanzen room, except バカになれ。バカになれ。Be a fool. Be an idiot. Be stupid. バカになれ。Be a fool. Well, this started to get to the Fukushima. Huh? He was not a baka. He was not a fool. As a matter of fact, compared with the other monks, he had gone on to graduate school, done very well. Why should he now throw all that away? It was a very trying, very difficult time for him. Over and over and over again, whatever he brought into that room, the master would simply say, be a fool, be a fool. Finally, it got to be such a struggle for Fukushima that, as he likes to say it, of course, you're not supposed to talk about what goes on in the room with the Zen master. That's between you and the master. If you discuss it, it can be very confusing for other people. You don't. But anyway, I was really up a tree. So, not, but at this point, I asked the monk next to me, and I said, every time I go into the Doksan room, he just tells me, be a fool, be an idiot. Does he say that to you? And the monk next to him, 21, 22 years old, said, no, he tells me to study hard. Which, of course, probably what he needed to hear. Anyway, eventually, Fukushima was able to let go of all of that precious knowledge and learning and wisdom and really become a fool. Then his practice went very smoothly. But that first couple of years was very, very tough. It was very hard just to be a fool. But eventually he became a darn good one, a very wise fool. When I used to go to the States with him, I went 4 years in the early 90s as his kind of interpreter assistant. We would get involved in all kinds of shenanigans there. I'm a very good packer. When I go, I prepare my underwear, count things, and I got it all there. Fukushima Roshi's not good that way. So the night before, we would leave very, very early in the morning. The night before, I would go to the monastery, and he'd have the towel around his bald head, and the Doksan room would be littered with all his clothes and the suitcase. And I had packed yesterday, but he was still. Anyway, he always forgot something real important. So one year, we fly to San Francisco, take a couple of days. He writes calligraphy and like on that fan right there to give his gifts to people. And we get over jet lag and get ready, and then we go around, travel the States. Well, every time we get to San Francisco, check into the hotel, and you can see he did it again. I forget something. What did you forget? I forget calligraphy paper. Okay, well, this isn't ordinary paper you can just pick up in the stationery store. This is a very special, absorbent kind of rice paper used for calligraphy, huh? Anyway, San Francisco, Chinatown. I make a couple of phone calls with the help of the concierge at the hotel. And sure enough, there's a big store in Chinatown, which sounds like it has something. So we take a taxi down. There's an old Chinese guy, and he's kind of interested. The Roshi's not wearing the full regalia, but kind of the work clothes. But, he's obviously a Japanese monk. Anyway, we find just about the right paper. It's very close. He's very happy. So we buy a whole bunch of it, and we go. And then I think exactly to that day, early February, exactly 1 year later, fly back to San Francisco. He's got that worried look on his face again. I forget something. What did you forget? I forget ink. Okay. Well, I still got the phone number, right? So I call, and we have ink, special ink for writing. So we go down the same store, the same old guy, and I believe it was to the day, exactly 1 year later. It's right around the Chinese New Year's. And he's kind of looking and we'd find, again, just about the exact right ink, just about what we need. And again, we'd buy a bunch of it. And then as we're ringing it up, he'd say, you come here last year, you forget paper. And Roshi said, yes, you remember well. And then the Chinese shopkeeper says, ooh, but you forget next year. And Roshi shoots back, maybe next year we forget calligrapher. Maybe next year we forget Zen master. And without missing a beat, the Chinese guy says, okay, we have them in the back too. Not all Zen masters would be delighted with that answer, but the Roshi thought that was so funny. He thought that was just delightful. And he just laughed and laughed and laughed. That belly laughed, and the Chinese man laughed. And there was no China. There was no Japan. It was just laugh, laugh, laugh in this old, dusty Chinese shop. Well, I won't tell you what he forgot the next year, but but he could enjoy that kind of thing. He had a real humor within and without. Another time we were in the plane flying somewhere. I think we were going to Arkansas. And he does one of these. Do they have hot springs onsen? You probably know in Japan, very, very popular. It's a very much a part of the culture there to go to an onsen, a natural hot springs and soak. Because some of them are very fancy, very expensive, but beautiful in the mountains sometimes. You have hot springs in America? No, I guess. It's a big country. He always thinks that's funny. You're American, right? Yeah, I'm American, but I don't know everything about America. You don't know hot springs. Anyway, we're going to Arkansas. And there's a hot springs, Arkansas. Hot springs. Maybe. Anyway, we arrive there, and the guy, the professor at the university there, Jay McDaniel, picks us up. And so Roshi's still laughing about American. He doesn't know they have hot springs. And Jay says, yeah, we have hot springs, yes. Oh, do you want to go? I'll take you. That was back when we still had a day or two free. Within a few years, we didn't have those kind of days anymore. He kept increasing more and more places. But anyway, we had a day, and from Little Rock, we got driven down to Hot Springs, Arkansas. And actually, back in the 30s, the Chicago Mafia used to come down, and, you know, gambling. It was a big place to be entertained and soak in the springs and gamble and whatever. Oh, we didn't gamble, but we went to the hot springs. And Jay McDaniel arranged a whole, you know, luxury deal with a massage. So Roshi, and actually I myself, I'm getting kind of excited here. You know, the vision of Japan, a big communal bath, sometimes as big as this room, you know. And, you know, usually the men and the women are separate, but so we would have a bunch of men sitting there, and of course, strangers, but you're sitting and you're soaking in the bath, and maybe you talk a little bit. It's a very, very nice atmosphere. Well, we get there, and they're bathtubs, just like you have at home. It's just a bathtub with a shower curtain, and another bathtub and a shower curtain. It was very different than what we were a little disappointed. But anyway, we each get into our little bath with our shower curtain, and I guess it was hot springs water, but we're soaking. And Roshi's not so impressed, so he goes for the massage, which is the next thing. And so I'm sitting, enjoying myself as much as I can in this old bathtub, and I can hear the, you know, it's not like in Japan and in Little Rock, they just, in Hot Springs, Arkansas, it's all this gooky, oily, greasy stuff. So the Roshi's lying on his stomach, this short, kind of chubby Japanese guy. There's a nice picture of him in his prime up there. You might want to take a look later. He's lying on his stomach, and this gigantic southern black guy is just like he's going to barbecue him or something. You can just hear, you know, I can hear where I am, just this. And I can tell, Roshi not comfortable. Maybe Roshi need help. So I get up, and just as I go into the room where he's getting the massage, I see this huge black dude standing over my diminutive little Zen master lying on his stomach and just finishing up. And then he says, now roll over. And with that, the Roshi leapt up, grabbed his bathrobe and said, I meet you outside, and he went outside. Well, some years later, that was pretty funny, but you kind of forget these things and all else that goes on. But several years later, we had a group from Arkansas visit the monastery, Tofukuji. And he starts telling this story with me interpreting. And as we're getting close to, I'm starting to wonder, what's he going to do with this one, you know? But sure enough, he told it pretty much just the way I told it. And he even remembered the English. So when he got to the end, he said, now roll over. But here's him, you know, he was almost making fun of himself and his situation, huh? Zen master, but, you know, butt naked, now roll over with this gigantic, you know, black guy. Very good masseuse, by the way. I really enjoyed it afterwards. But he could laugh and laugh and laugh at himself. We all need to do that, don't we? I think the most valuable thing I learned from him was a couple of decades daily, huh? In the Dokusan, the sans, and the one-on-one room, huh? The most valuable thing I learned was that he never taught a thing. In the Dokusan room, in one-on-one. He never taught me a thing, not a shred of the Dharma, never. As it must be. Huh? Daye, or Dahui, who I just mentioned earlier, speaks of it this way. I don't esteem my late teacher's virtues on the past. I just honor the way he didn't explain it to me. If he had, how could there be today? What Daye is talking about is actually the story of Kyogen. The second part of that quote is a very famous statement from Kyogen. You know, the bamboo, the story that played such a role when Fukushima was a young teenager. I would like to read what Fukushima's teacher, Shibayama, has to say about that incident of Kyogen and the bamboo, because it brings everything together. What we are doing in this retreat, Poshan, Fukushima, Shibayama, and us. Once again, this is Shibayama commenting on the story of Kyogen. Kyogen was a man of erudition and strong memory, and was unusually bright and talented. From his childhood, he was fond of learning. He first studied under Master Hyakujo, but as the latter died soon after he started, he continued his Zen training under Isan. Isan recognized unusual genius in Kyogen and wished somehow to open Kyogen's spiritual eye. One day, he called Kyogen and said, I do not want to hear from you what you have learned from scriptures, nor the result of your accumulated studies and speculation. Just give me the essential word about yourself before you were born. Before you knew either east or west. At this unexpected question, Kyogen was quite at a loss and could not utter a word. He searched diligently, but each time he presented an answer, Isan, the master, flatly rejected it. Finally, with his energy all exhausted, Kyogen came to Isan and begged him, please teach it to me. Isan said, even if I show it to you, it is mine and has nothing to do with you. And he ignored Kyogen's plea. In great disappointment, Kyogen took out his books and notes from his years of study and burned them all, saying, "Pictures of rice cake don't satisfy hunger." Driven to despair by his inability to break through the barrier, he gave up his training and left Isan's monastery in tears. He visited the grave of national teacher Etchu and decided to lead his life as a nameless gravekeeper there. Although his biography does not give us any details, his inner struggle and searching must have continued and increased day and night, even after he despaired of his ability and decided to just live as a gravekeeper. His religious great doubt must have been intensified to the point where the slightest touch might result in an explosion. The opportunity was ripe. One day, while cleaning the yard, Kyogen threw the rubbish into the bushes. Other versions, you can imagine, over the centuries, they speak of him sweeping or even using a sickle. It doesn't matter. They probably don't really know exactly. But according to this version, Kyogen threw the rubbish into the bushes, and a stone happened to hit the bamboo. He heard the tuck, and at that moment, all of a sudden, was enlightened and burst into laughter in spite of himself. He immediately returned to his hut, changed his clothes, burned incense, prostrated himself in the direction of Isan, and praised the virtue of his teacher, saying, "The compassion of Isan is indeed greater than that of my own parents. Had he taught it to me when I asked him, I could never have had this great joy today." As you know, in Chinese, usually the subject and also the object are left out. So in another translation, remember Kyogen is bowing. Isan has since passed away, but he's bowing in the direction of Master Isan and saying this. So in another translation, he actually makes it like he's speaking to Isan, which makes sense. Perhaps this is an even better translation, the same statement at the end. "The gratitude I owe you for your great compassion is far greater than I owe my own parents. If you had given in to my pleas that day and said something to help me, this moment would never have arrived." Even more interesting, Hakuin, the great Rinzai Zen reformer, also tells this story, and he concludes this way. Hakuin, "Do you see? The masters of our school have never imparted one shred of Dharma to their students. Not because they were worried about protecting the Dharma, they were worried about protecting their students." If this doesn't make you cry, your heart is made of iron. Fukushima Roshi used to take a lot of pictures. He wasn't a very good photographer, but he tried. So when he went to the States, he would always take the official Japanese photograph, you know, the group, the university, the famous location. He would even do this sometimes, which is what Japanese young people do. But he would put all of those hundreds of pictures from his annual trips into a shoebox he had. And he used to tell me, "Someday when I get old, I look through those pictures. And I like that very much. Someday." Well, I think that day has come. So I can't help but see Fukushima now, perhaps on his lap In the wheelchair, the shoebox, huh? Unable now really even to smile. Yet his eyes are still bright. What does he see? He wrote the calligraphy on the fan up there on the fireplace, which Dale kindly brought. It says something like, "The village across the bridge has fine wine." He translates it this way, which is also quite nice. "Crossing over the bridge, the village wine is nice." And the second line, "On the other bank, wild flowers, fragrant." To fulfill the task entrusted in me, I will gladly grind my bones to dust, unworthy though they be. Many of you know and have met Fukushima. We have a few minutes. Would anyone like to say a word? A happy birthday to him? Please feel free if you would like to say something. Let us then get back to work. He would want nothing more. Thank you for listening so intently.